Hey, Upper Friday. This week we learned that nothing might charge you for an AI button, Apple might lose their $20 billion contract because they were too slow, and Android development goes private. Welcome to the Friday Checkout. This video was sponsored by Sayly. Okay, for my first story of the week, you know how the Nothing Phone 3A and the 3A Pro both have a new hardware button called the Essential Key? Well, that new button might get paid. Specifically, pressing that button opens the so-called Essential Space, which takes a screenshot and also other things like voice and text inputs, date, time, location, etc., and then combines all of that using AI to save what you were doing into a kind of AI memory. It can remind you of stuff with context and so on. Now, as far as ideas for AI go, I think this is fine. It's kind of like the Pixel screenshot app, just with a physical button, more or less. But we just got reports that the Essential Space, or at least parts of it, could have a price tag of $120. Android Authority found code strings in the app that included words like free trial and AI credits, plus also evidence of a potential price tag that might be $120. Now, we don't know if that's $120 a year or maybe for a lifetime subscription, but yeah, having a physical button that takes you to a paid feature feels strange. The company never directly said if the Essential Space would be either free or cost money originally, and when they were contacted, they said that, quote, no decisions have been made yet around potential pricing, and our focus remains on improving the product. Now, we did just see Garmin this week add a paid tier to their app for additional AI insights, so this attempt of trying to monetize AI clearly seems to be the direction that everyone in the industry is going towards. And for nothing in particular, I wouldn't even be surprised if this was basically a planted leak where they wanted us to see this and to gauge our reaction. Like, are we outraged? Are we in love? Are we just vaguely okay with it? Yeah, what do you think? Okay, and for my second story of the week, Apple might be losing its most lucrative contract due to being slow. Specifically, Apple was barred from the Google antitrust trial, which put its $20 billion search deal on the line. Hilariously, this is apparently because, quote, Apple simply waited too long. The government says that in October 2024, they proposed remedies to Google's monopoly situation, including that the company end its long-running revenue-sharing partnership with Apple, and then again in November, they clearly showed that Apple could be impacted. But Apple then waited 33 more days to respond in December, arguing that it's, quote, entitled to fully participate because it has a stake in the outcome of the case. But a judge said that that was too long, and then a higher court had just confirmed that 33 days seems hard to justify. Eesh. Apple reported a bit under $94 billion in net income in 2024, so Google's payment of $20 billion in pure profit represents a pretty significant part of their business that they really would not want to lose. All of this might not be final yet, plus of course other search engine providers might still choose to pay, but none of this sounds good for Apple. Okay, and for my third story of the week, Google is changing how Android is being developed. Specifically, as Android Authority pointed out, Google will develop the Android OS fully in private going forward, which Google then also confirmed. Importantly, Android will still remain open source, at least the AOSP version, that is. So what's happening is that Google until recently had both a public and a private development channel, and they're getting rid of the public one. So this means we'll stop seeing development happening basically in real time in public, and instead they'll finish things up internally and then release it typically once a quarter or so. The likely reason is that with the code sitting in public as it does right now, people are starting to get really good at digging through the new stuff and finding updates that Google didn't want to release just yet. For example, here's Michelle Roman finding just 1 week ago that a new update reduces the loading times by 30% for some Pixel devices. These are the kind of leaks that they want to avoid. Or maybe all of this is an evil plot to make even more money. Okay, as for the release monitor, we start with the Lightphone 3, which actually just went up for pre-orders and also got its first reviews this week. The Verge, for example, said that they're, quote, getting close to nailing their formula, so that sounds encouraging. Next, Porsche announced what it calls the e-bike Sport 2025, which is a 10,000 euro e-bike, which you can buy if you want your fancy bike to match your very fancy car. Nice. Next, point-and-shoot cameras are back because I guess Gen Z is having a nostalgia for a time that they never lived in, so Canon announced the new $900 PowerShot V1, and also a new budget mirrorless camera in the form of the R50V that costs $850 with the kit lens. Maybe not bad if you want to have a basic camera, but dear Gen Z audience, please keep in mind that your phone takes better photos and videos than most of these cameras. Moving on, Poco has launched the new F7 Ultra and F7 Pro, which as usual try to win by offering very aggressive price-to-performance ratios, such as flagship Snapdragon chips for 699 euros at launch. pretty good for the spec lovers among you. And in more stuff for budget-oriented consumers, there's also the new Asus VivoBook S14 and S16, which are laptops with Snapdragon X chips starting at $799. Nice. Meanwhile, on quite the opposite budget range are Samsung's new 2025 model Class Neo QLED 4K TVs, which went on sale this week as well, going from 50 to 98 inches. Links to the products are in the description as usual, and now onto the brief, which starts with Apple announcing WWDC. The Worldwide Developer Conference will happen on the 9th of June, and Apple is expected to show iOS 19 with a major UI revamp, which should be pretty exciting. Meanwhile, still with Apple, the company put up the Lumen Terminal Pro on apple.com as a product page. This is, of course, the very cool-looking computer that was used in the hit TV show Severance. And to spice things up even further, they also created a LinkedIn page for Lumen Industries from the show as well. Sadly, you can neither buy the computer nor can you apply for a job, but it's a pretty fun way to drum up some hype for a TV show that also got renewed for a season 3. Then, in sad news this week, one of the co-CEOs of Samsung Electronics, J.H. Han, passed away, leaving the company with only one CEO. Rest in peace. Meanwhile, returning from the ashes is the Nissan Leaf, which is now an SUV for some reason? More details are scarce for now, except that the model should properly release in 2026. Why does every car under the sun have to turn into an SUV? I don't understand, but this one looks pretty good, I guess. But hey, also in kind of EV news, Rivian was apparently secretly making e-bikes and has now spun out its lab into a new company called Also. We don't know what their e-bikes actually look like yet, but I guess they didn't want Porsche to have all the fun to themselves. Anyway, next, Amazon's new range of Kindles finally got a long overdue feature, which is page turning by double tapping the backside of the device. Hallelujah, that is a revolution if you have either a ColorSoft or a 12th generation Paperwhite. And in more gadget news, the smaller 12-inch Surface Pro just appeared in certification databases, meaning that a launch for it is expected very soon too, and this device is expected to feature a Snapdragon chip as well. Nice! Then, in news I did not expect, Napster was somehow sold for $207 million in 2025, and apparently it will be used as a quote, social music platform that prioritizes active fan engagement via virtual 3D spaces for music fans to attend concerts and listening parties. I can't decide if this is a bad idea because they're pitching the idea of the metaverse like from 3 years ago, or because they're using the brand of like the pirate software company from 20 years ago. Could be either. Meanwhile, in sad but also slightly funny news, this week's the Have I Pwned guy, Troy Hunt, got pwned himself, which ended up leaking his personal blog's MailChimp subscribers list. This is a serious security researcher, so I guess the takeaway is that we're all gonna get pwned one day anyway. But hey, we also have some AI launches this week, starting with OpenAI launching its own image generation tool, which can be triggered directly from the ChatGPT interface, and it seems to produce some of the best results that we've seen yet. Too bad that OpenAI says that now their GPUs are melting due to all the demand, so they now have to throttle its use. Or maybe it's a good thing because we'll have a few more days before we set the entire world on fire so we can generate images, which will then make us question everything that we see online? Oh, never mind that. Fighting back against OpenAI this week was Google, who announced its new Gemini 2.5 models, which is their next generation family of AI reasoning models. And on top of that, the company also announced a really weird new AI idea that goes like this. You take a screenshot of something related to a trip, like a photo with a place name in it, or some personal notes that show you a list of places that you'd want to go to, and you can share that with Google Maps, which will use AI to recognize place names and such from your screenshot, and will save that to Google Maps to help you plan a trip. Why would you screenshot text and then share that screenshot with Google Maps when you could just copy the text itself and just paste it in the app? I don't understand some of these AI things. But hey, one thing I do end up doing pretty much every time I plan a trip these days is getting an eSIM from Saily. I recently went on a filming trip across China, Indonesia, and Thailand, and I used Saily's eSIMs in all three countries with great success. You just download an app, you pay a few bucks, and you have an affordable eSIM with mobile internet almost right away. It works in over 180 countries, and there's no need to re-download the app as you switch countries either. Plans are super cheap, like in Thailand, for example, they start at just $2.99, which is super nice, but if you use my code, TFC, you'll also get 15% off even on top of those affordable prices. I could buy all three of my eSIMs from the comfort of my very own home before ever arriving to my destination, and I didn't have to hunt for airport Wi-Fi or for a physical SIM card that is sold to me in some random booth. Almost all modern iPhone and Android devices support eSIMs, and you just need to download the app with the link in the description to set it up in a few taps. The link is saily.com/TFC, which is also linked down in the description, for 15% off, plus there's also a 30-day money-back guarantee if something doesn't work. So give them a try, and happy travels!